DW Africa Link.
Police brutality. How many more people must be injured or die before Kenya deals with it? The recent death of influencer Albert Ojwang in police custody has sparked nationwide protests. In a disturbing incident recently captured on camera, police in Nairobi shot a defenseless street vendor at point-blank range. Despite dozens being arrested and journalists attacked, not a single officer has been held accountable. The urgency of this issue cannot be overstated. So, why is the police force seemingly aggressive, and how can it be made more accountable? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Activists and the father of 22-year-old Boniface Kariuki, shot by police during protests, are demanding justice. Kariuki, a street vendor, was unarmed and walking away when an officer in a mask opened fire. He's now in intensive care after emergency surgery. Police say two officers have been arrested and are under investigation. But protesters are demanding more arrests, firings, and convictions. Anything less, they say, makes the system complicit in police brutality. For more on this, let me bring in Nyamisa Chelagat, an activist at the heart of the protests who amplifies victims' voices and demands accountability from Kenya's security forces. DW correspondent in Kenya, Andrew Aseke, is also with us. He has been closely following the protests and events surrounding them. Hello and welcome to the Africa Link podcast. Nyamisa, you've been on the front lines both physically and digitally. What was your reaction to the video of police shooting a vendor who was not armed during the protests?
Thank you for having me. I think it just goes to show the audacity in which the police force operates. For a very long time, we've been saying over and over again that the police are using force against peaceful people and claiming that the same peaceful protesters are the problem and they are the ones provoking the police and all that. And I think for a very long time you'd say that and you either sound crazy or you sound hysterical or they'll say you're lying. But this time we can all see, yeah, it's out for the public to see that when the police come out to the protests, what they do is they target people who sometimes have nothing even to do with the protest. As long as you're in CBD and they can reach you, they are violent towards you. And to make it worse this time, they even went as far as working with the goons right in our faces. And if we didn't have our cameras out and if reporters and journalists weren't out in the protests recording everything that was going on, we would sound crazy if we told people the police and the goons were working together on Tuesday. So it's extremely sad that this had to happen to someone who was just trying to make a living. But at the same time, for once, we have them on camera doing the things that we've been losing our minds trying to explain when we say that we have a police brutality problem in the country.
What do you think gives the police the audacity, right, to shoot someone who is not armed during protests?
I think the thing that gives the police the audacity to do this is the fact that, as they say, fish rots from the head. So at the helm of our leadership, there's a problem, there's a rot. And that rot is the disregard for rule of law. Yesterday, the former CJ David Maraga was on TV, on Nation TV, and he mentioned that part of the problem we have in this country is that our leaders don't follow the rule of law. And if the presidency disregards the rule of law, and if the heads of the police disregard the rule of law, there is no way the police at the bottom of this chain would bother to follow the law as is. For instance, in the current situation, The reason why we were out in the streets was because of Ojwang's death and the circumstances surrounding Ojwang's death, which was, again, a complete disregard for the rule of law. And we saw how the police force operates from the stories that have been coming out, the lies and the statements and the obvious lying under oath in front of parliament and in front of the Senate. And you can clearly tell that these are people who are so used to do this that to them, it doesn't really matter. And I think the police target especially young men from low-income communities. The person that was shot at, he was selling masks. You can clearly tell this is not someone who comes from what they were claiming the protesters are, which are the middle class with iPhones and KFC eating and, you know, Uber riding kind of people. They targeted someone who was trying to just make a living. And for over and over, we have seen this happen with young men from low-income communities being targeted by the police, being extorted by the police, being beaten by the police and profiled by the police. It's things that they are so used to doing. They know that if you come from a quote-unquote powerless situation, there's nothing you're going to do to them. Yeah. Even if you report this to the police, that the police are the same ones who are in court prosecuting these cases, and the files get lost and witnesses get intimidated and people get fixed. Like, we can clearly see with Ojwang's case that there's a game that is being played right from top of the police leadership. So I think this, as I said before, it's a case of fish rotting from the head.
Right. Right. I mean, Andrew Waseke, coming to you, we've heard Nyamisa basically echoing what it seems a lot of Kenyans are saying. On that, you've been talking to a lot of them. Tell us more about what they are saying about the police response to the latest protests.
What I'm seeing on the ground, and especially online, also on social media, is a mix of deep anger and fatigue, because this is not new. Kenyans are outraged, but there's also this growing numbness, because these are things that people have been facing for so many years. The same things. They go to the streets, they get hurt, they get killed. So people are asking how many more, you know? The fact that a police officer could just shoot an armed vendor at close range. And remember, it was in broad daylight and journalists were around there, so the cameras were rolling. This has really, really shaken people. So it's no longer just activists or civil society speaking out. Ordinary Kenyans are sort of saying that enough is enough, and the trust in the police is eroding, and it has eroded because, remember, this is something that happened last year during the finance bill protests. It happened during the previous two elections, and in between the protests that have been there, people have been injured and people have been killed. So I think they have said that enough is enough. They'll use this as a cause for the next protests.
Right. So normally when protesters are injured, or unfortunately in some situations in Kenya, when even some are killed, there's some fear inflicted, right? And so it either somehow dumps down the impact of the protest, some decide not to risk their lives anymore. Is that what is happening in Kenya now? Or is it doing the opposite, where people feel like, nope, enough is enough. We're really going to make our voices heard. And this must stop.
There is numbness. People can no longer take it anymore. They don't fear the tear gas. They don't fear the batons. They don't fear the water cannons. Now they are saying that the more you have been targeting us, now we are going to the streets and we'll just do the same thing. If you want to kill all of us, kill us. If you want to injure all of us, do the same. Like right now, in honor of this vendor who was shot at close range, there are people on social media who have said that, let us, everybody, Kenyans, if you can afford a mask, just wear a mask on Friday, you know? And this is sort of a form of protest that is evolving. But still, people will go on the streets and they are numb to that pain. They don't care if you'll arrest them. They don't care if you're going to shoot them. Remember, even journalists are being targeted, you know? Yeah.
Mm. Kenyans have been calling for police reform. Based on all that's happening, does it seem like authorities are doing anything different to put the police in check? Nyamisa, this is to you.
I think I have said before on my social media that I believe that we don't have a policy problem. For instance, when it comes to police reforms, recently there's been conversation about the police task force that was being led by the former CJ Maraga. And if you read the recommendations from that task force, there's a lot of very positive recommendations that were made from basically how the police are treated and how they are paid and how the police interact with common Mwananchi and, you know, all the nitty-gritties, all the things that they keep repeating, even the things that the CS was mentioning the other day about reforming the police. Those are things that have been spoken about before. Policies have been formulated around those things. We just have an implementation problem, and the implementation problem comes from one, disregard for rule of law, and secondly, corruption. So when it comes to our police, the kind of reforms that we have, we already have them in writing. What we need is to work on the implementation, and the implementation needs proper leadership, both at a national level and proper leadership within the police.
Right. And so Interior Minister Mukomen says the state is prioritizing order and safety, but people want to see officers fired, even jailed. Basically, protesters and Kenyans generally want accountability. Based on the response from government and what's happening on the ground, is there a common ground?
There's a very big disconnect between what the government says, what the police says, and what the people see. And I think the problem is that we are working with a regime that doesn't care for the truth. And for some reason, I feel like they also don't really understand the people. Either they don't really understand the people, or they actively choose to ignore what people say or what people want. And they also choose to ignore the fact that Kenyans are not idiots. We are not. Our literacy level is not wanting enough for the police to put out, for instance, a statement that says someone in their custody hit their head on the wall till they died, quote-unquote idiocy, because they are not foolish and they know we are not foolish. But at the same time, I don't think there is an explanation they can give to us that make any sense. So they just say anything.
Right, right. Andrew, I don't know what your take is on that, but for sure, this is not just about Albert Ojwang or one protester. People are talking about years of impunity, years of police brutality, right, where many lives have been claimed. Is this the general understanding among protesters that you're speaking to, and that this is exactly what they want to change?
Eddie, this is not just about Albert Ojwang. I will say that Ojwang's death has been sort of a spark, but this fire is a fire that has been smoldering for years since, especially because of the elections that we have had that usually are highly contested. So people remember the finance bill protest that was last year, and they remember the police shootings in Madare and other low-income areas like Kibera, which we covered. I was on the ground all that time. So for many, this is part of a larger pattern where poor and young Kenyans, especially those from informal settlements, are seen as expendable. This moment is about decades of injustice. It has brought up a fire that not just one name like Ojwang or one incident like the shooting can be justified as a reason for people going on the streets. It's powder keg that has been there, and somebody has, now it has exploded.
Right. And has there been any real movement on accountability? That is, you know, talking about investigations, suspensions. We know some officers have been suspended. So that's at least moving the needle in a certain right direction, right? Statements from police leadership. But it doesn't seem like even if that happens, that people are satisfied with it. Why is that?
For the first time, actually, Eddie, there has actually been some movement this time around. Three officers implicated into the death of Ojwang are facing court proceedings, like you just said. And this morning, two police constables who were caught on video shooting the mask vendor were arraigned at the Milimani Law Courts in Nairobi. I was following that, and the court has ordered that they remain in custody for 15 days pending investigations. That's a shift from what we usually see, because in the past, it was statements from the National Police, statements from the president, or briefings from the interior minister, like Murkomen, who says investigations are ongoing, but nothing ever happened. So, yes, this time the wheels of justice are actually moving, but very, very cautiously. People are asking, will this lead to convictions, or it will just be the usual? These people will just appear in court, and then something happens and no justice will be served. And that's why many still remain skeptical. But to answer you, yes, this time at least we have seen some sort of accountability.
Okay, some sort of accountability, Nyamisa. Are you satisfied with that so far?
I wouldn't say I'm satisfied with any of that. I think the first problem we have is we have lost faith with the police force and the judicial system and the entire system as a whole. So we are at a point where it's very hard to impress us, because we've been here before. We've seen the theatrics before. I'm glad that things are moving. Clearly, there's a lot of pressure to have this, the perpetrators brought to book. But we can also clearly see that they are avoiding touching some of these people who are actually the problem. They're dancing around the issue and they are targeting the smaller fish and all that. Personally, what I'd want to see is Lagat in court, not all the other people below him. And we need to understand why this happened, why the orders were given and who gave out the orders, and him being implicated in this case, and we are not seeing him as part of the people taken to court, is a problem.
So for those that may not be following keenly, who is Lagat?
Lagat is the Deputy Inspector General of the police. And the reason why he's a person of interest in this case is because the teacher, stroke blogger who died in the hands of the police, was accused of publishing false information about Lagat. That's the Deputy Inspector General of Police. And from what we understand, the orders to have Ojwang arrested came from the IG and the Deputy IG, who is Lagat. So for now, what we want to see is Lagat arrested and arraigned in court, so that we understand what it is that Ojwang did to him that had him report to the police that a false statement was written about him on social media. And on top of that, if there was a case of defamation on social media as claimed by Lagat, that is not a criminal offense. What should have been done is Lagat should have sued Ojwang for whatever it is that was published about him, rather than send the police to go and pick him up from his home and drive him 400 kilometers only for him to die in police custody.
Do you think Kenya is at a tipping point, right, where things are to some extent being taken more seriously, although you say you're not satisfied still and much more needs to be done?
I think that this changes a lot of things. I had mentioned earlier that for a lot of time, people had complained about how the police conduct themselves, and because of lack of evidence, especially to the public eye, it was very hard to, for instance, say that I was just walking around the CBD and, you know, I got shot at by the police. Everyone would think, no, you were at the protest. You were probably provoking the police. You were probably trying to break into shops and all that. I think this changes a lot of things on how the general public views the police and how the general public understands how the police operates. Now, I think the cat is out of the bag when it comes to the corruption in the police force and the violence from the police and the kind of power that the police force has over people, like, for instance, the kind of power like the IG and the Deputy IG hold over people and over even the other junior police officers. I think this is on top of all the things that have happened for the past 1 year, especially since it's exactly 1 year since this protest started. I think I wouldn't say this particularly is the tipping point. I think 25th of June last year was the tipping point in how people see politics in this country, especially young people. But this just goes to add on to the many things that we keep seeing and it keeps getting revealed to us as young people. And I think it will affect largely how we vote in 2027. That's if we get to 2027 with this same government. But it will definitely affect how we vote.
As we wrap this up, Andrew, what we know is likely to happen next, right? Are more protests expected? We know the 25th of March is a date, for instance, that people are expecting massive protests. And in terms of however that goes, how do people want to move on from that?
Honestly, if things continue as they are, I think we are heading into a much deeper crisis. There is a generation, sort of a generational reckoning happening. Young people are questioning everything, that is the police, the government, the justice system, and they want somebody held accountable. If no one is held accountable, especially Eliud Lagat, the Deputy Inspector General, because he was the complainant. And if you listen to what the police officers, the police officer who, the first one who was arrested, what he told the investigators, he said that he was receiving orders from the bosses, and he also mentioned Lagat's name. So if he's not held accountable, we might not just see more protests. We might see sort of the total breakdown of public trust. That's between the common mwananchi, that's a citizen, and the government. And rebuilding that trust will take more than these press conferences that we see every single day.
Okay. Thank you very much, Andrew. Quick final one from you, Nyamisa. I mean, you've consistently used digital platforms to mobilize and document abuse. You're an activist. How important is civic tech in reshaping Kenya's police accountability story?
I think civic tech is very important in every aspect of what we're trying to do in terms of resetting this country. For instance, we know that when we're fighting with the current government in the streets, they'll throw tear gas at us, they'll shoot at us, they'll do all that. But when it comes to taking the fight to social media and every other digital media, I don't think they would win that fight. We are many and we have time. And anyone who has dealt with Kenyans online know Kenyans are very petty and we're like a dog with a bone.
Okay. Now that's an interesting way to wrap it up.
Yeah. So we know that when it comes to a social media fight, we'll win the fight. But on top of that, when it comes to accountability, I think civic tech has been very important in bringing up conversations around how we can, for instance, secure our votes, how we can ensure that there's public participation, both online and offline. We have seen people use emails, like we've seen digital tools come up, we've seen GPTs come up. So I think it's very important in one, the spread of information and the documentation of information. For instance, the shooting that happened on Tuesday in CBD, if it wasn't for social media and digital platforms and our phone cameras, we would not have gotten the cop that did this. So I think civic tech is very important in this fight. And I think with time, the conversation around even blockchain technology when it comes to accountability might come up and might become mainstream conversation. And I'm looking forward to such times.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nyamisa Chelagat, an activist at the heart of the protest. Also DW correspondent in Kenya, Andrew Wasike. Thank you very much. According to some experts, Kenya's police brutality has deep roots in colonial-era policing, political interference, and a lack of accountability. But change is not just a distant dream. It's a real possibility. Although challenges remain, countries like South Africa and Ghana have shown that reforms like independent oversight, community policing, and greater transparency can work. So if Kenya strengthens its institutions, it can curb police violence and start rebuilding public trust. There is hope for a better future. We welcome your thoughts on the matter, so please share with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, made for minds.